Hi, friends. Welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants,
Nickelodeon's official podcast about all things SpongeBob.
I'm Hector Navarro.
And I'm Frankie Grande.
On today's episode of SpongeBob Binge Pants, we're talking about two of the most iconic, and I'll say it again, iconic episodes of the series, Jellyfishing and Plankton, with an exclamation point. And the really cool thing is, Frankie, who did we just talk to?
We just talked to Mr. Lawrence, the voice of Plankton exclamation point. So you met the man already, the man behind the villain that would become one of the most iconic and beloved characters in the SpongeBob universe and beyond. Yep. And now let's talk about not only jellyfishing, but his introduction episode to the world. Let's get into Jellyfishing and Plankton.
On this episode, we are talking about jellyfishing, yet another iconic episode that introduces us to the sport of jellyfishing with SpongeBob and Patrick, but also we get to explore more their amazing relationship with Squidward, as Squidward attempts to get in on the fun one more time, but ends up in a horrible accident, at which point SpongeBob and Patrick make it their MO to make Squidward feel better and have the best day ever, which, as we all know, goes terribly wrong. Let's get into it.
But what is best is what we save for last. The one surefire thing to make your best day ever the best day ever.
Jellyfishing!
This is Jellyfish Fields, where wild jellyfish roam just waiting to be captured.
So, Frankie, what did you think of this episode? This, again, classic episode of SpongeBob SquarePants, Jellyfishing. What'd you think?
I cry laugh at this episode. Like, I cannot breathe with laughter when Squidward comes up the hill. I might be jumping a little bit further into the episode, but basically SpongeBob and Patrick, you know, go jellyfishing. They have this amazing, wonderful time. Squidward gets so unbelievably injured by trying to chase a jellyfish himself. And when he comes back up the hill, and he is a mummy in that motorized wheelchair. I mean, I just start belly laughing, and I basically belly laugh from there until the end of the episode. I think it's one of the funniest episodes.
I think it's hard to do the, here's a character who's injured, and now the humor is going to come from them continually being injured. Like, we've seen it a million plus times, and sometimes it's like hard to watch that stuff because you feel bad for the character. Yeah. And this episode strikes the perfect balance where, like, I do feel bad for Squidward, but at the same time, when Patrick takes the jellyfishing net
and jams it in his hand
and tells him to firmly grasp it and jams it, and there's that close up, and knowing that it's Patrick, knowing that it's Squidward, and he's muffled and he's screaming, it is the funniest thing in the episode. I think it's so, so funny. Did you
and
have
I think
another?
That's a beautiful moment, though. I think that's a beautiful lesson learned about looking back on something that was animated 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that, like, you know, sometimes the only thing that we can do in the face of tragedy, in the face of catastrophe, in the face of injury, is laugh.
Mm.
And sometimes that is actually the best medicine in the moment, you know? And obviously that's a great thing that we are allowed to do in the cartoon world because we know those characters are fine.
He's very much not fine. Like, he's got his legs sticking up in the cast, right? Because of his multiple legs, which I think is so funny. And I also love the very opening to the episode where our narrator Frenchie, the way he says jellyfish, where he's like jellyfish, like with such a soft J with that Y, I think it's so funny.
jellyfish. Yeah, and there's so many iconic moments. I mean, this is when we're introduced to the concept of best day ever, which becomes obviously,
you're right,
as we know, the best day ever. Like,
you're absolutely
one
right.
of the most classic SpongeBob episodes ever is kind of introduced here as they try to give Squidward their best day ever and end up, you know, even the scene when Patrick is ladling soup into his mouth and it's not working, so he's trying to blow it, cool it off, but is just scalding his face by trying to do it and blowing the letters all over his face is just hysterical. They did such a great job with this episode.
I love the way that the SpongeBob storytellers will kind of pick and choose their physics and pick and choose their realities to put into this world. So, like, we're underwater, we know this, but as you've explained, Professor Frankie, like there is still an ocean under the ocean. So I'm already sold on that. Like now that I know that, I'm like, okay, there's other things about the underwater world that I can accept. But the fact that he has soup, and normally the show itself is so whimsical and it's so absurdist and so crazy. And yet the simple act of like blowing on soup too hard to where it splashes on Squidward's face, I feel like it's such a grounded and kind of down to earth bit. Like it's not a crazy over the top exaggerated thing. It's almost kind of subtle, and then it turns into being exaggerated, but it's so funny because of how maybe relatable it is. I don't know, just because when you're a kid and you're watching this, you're like, yeah, soup's hot, that would hurt real bad.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like we've all kind of done that. Like I feel like there's always been that moment of like, you know, as a kid anyway, for me, like blowing on that hot soup and like completely splattering it all over the place.
Yes.
Like I know I did it as a kid, so I didn't learn for a long time how to properly eat soup, to be honest. I don't know if I can do it today without making a mess or without burning my mouth.
I'm sure you're a great soup eater. I'm positive you're a great soup eater. You're so
Hector.
Put together. You're a great soup eater. Here's the thing I don't know about. I've never been stung by a jellyfish.
Oh, I have information.
You have information because I have never, but that's one of the things that like, not just in cartoons, but like in movies and TV shows, like it, and as a kid, I feel like it was one of those things along with like quicksand where you're like, you think you're going to deal with quicksand all the time in your adult life when you're a kid because of how like prevalent it is in media. But jellyfish, you can get stung by a jellyfish by going swimming in the ocean at the beach even. So like, I've thankfully never been so far stung by a jellyfish. You have information. Is that information that you yourself have been stung, sir?
Yes. Oh my God. So I am a jellyfish magnet. Yes, there are these creatures called man of war jellyfish, which float on the top of the ocean. I was raised in Florida from much of my life and I got stung by those all the time. But then also, so when I scuba dive, I also magically attract a jellyfish. Like every time, even if there's no one to be seen, I get stung by a jellyfish. So much to the point of one day I was like, I'm not getting stung today. So I wore head to toe a wetsuit. I wore boots. I wore gloves. I wore a mask that came like this around my mask. And guess where I got stung? The one place it could get me was my lips, and I got stung by a jellyfish right on my lips. And it was like the one piece of skin that was exposed. So I'm a jellyfish magnet. It goes away pretty fast. I haven't gotten severely injured at all.
Like the pain goes away?
Yeah, it's not something that stays. Actually, they tell you to pee on jellyfish stings, actually.
Okay, that was my follow-up question, Frankie, and it's awkward because how do you ask this to
pee on my lip?
No.
I didn't do that. I did not have anyone pee on my lip. But it is fun, and it is I mean, like, it's a fun fact that like these things are the things you're supposed to do, but I didn't do that. I just kind of like let it, and it was totally fine.
I'm going to need producer Ethan to jump in again and confirm if that's true or not.
our producer said that you're not actually supposed to pee on a jellyfish sting. Great.
A scientist told him, but here's the thing. Frankie, you're a scientist. You're a scientist though. So
I am a scientist.
We're kidding, he's not. And any of the times where you were stung when you were like younger and stuff, like in Florida, has there ever been like maybe stung on the leg? Has there ever been a case where you're like, I need somebody to pee on my leg, or somebody was like, I insist. Okay, good. No. Good.
I was like, that's ridiculous. I'll be fine.
Can you describe the pain of being stung by a jellyfish? Because I have no frame of reference. I don't know how painful it is.
So I was stung by a wasp as well as a kid, and it's like, it's kind of like a lesser version of that because it's not as concentrated. So the way a jellyfish works, and this is part of Frankie's facts, is in those long tendrils that they have cells called nematocysts. And I was actually pretty obsessed with them when I discovered what they were, because they have microscopic harpoons.
No.
These cells, yes, have little harpoons that they shoot the harpoons into you. And that's what delivers, you know, the toxin that stings you. And if you're a small enough creature, that harpoon can actually draw you in, and then they pull you into the tentacles. So there's little cells that are loaded harpoons that will sting you. So it's like, it's like a wasp sting, but instead of it being concentrated, it's like a long, long. So it kind of spreads it out in
a bunch of microscopic.
The bigger they are, the scarier the sting. So yeah. I've been very lucky in my life that I haven't actually had to be, you know, like hospitalized or treated for my stings.
Have you been stung by kind of like smaller jellyfish? I guess kind of normal sized.
Yeah, they were kind of normal sized. Okay. Like a normal sized jellyfish or ones that I didn't even get to see.
Because they get you and they swim away so you can't even see what the heck stung you.
Or they've been chopped up by a boat. Oh. And so only their tentacles are floating around in the ocean.
And that can still get you?
Yeah, can still get you.
Wow.
Yeah, they're pretty crazy.
When you said microscopic harpoons, I pictured Tobey Maguire's thumb from the first Spider-Man movie when he like looks at his thumb and there's all these little spikes that come out. Oh my gosh.
Oh, we're such nerds. I love us so much.
Okay, because I was going to ask if this episode kind of gives a realistic depiction of jellyfish.
I mean, they don't chase you. They have no sort of, you know, consciousness. You know, they're just beings floating in the water without any sort of like, let's go that way. Or like, there's food over there. Let me go swim towards that. They're all regulated. They're regulated by the light. You know, they can move towards and away from light. They have photoreceptors, and that's how they move up or down light and potentially temperature. But no, they're not like, they can't chase Squidward, you know, or run back home to mommy, which I also think is like one of the craziest, greatest moments of this episode is when we're all of a sudden Squidward has finally caught his jellyfish and happens to be smacking against the mothership, which it's very close encounters of the third kind that like takes off and it's like boom, 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 boom.
it was a great button to finish the episode too, to bring back the huge jellyfish. I thought, yeah, it was great. It was so great.
And you know what? And also, so that kids are not upset, the final image of the episode is Squidward fine.
Yes.
He has been completely electrocuted. His cast shatters, and under which he looks great.
He's fine.
He looks just like normal Squidward. So, you know, it's like the laugh at his expense was actually quite all right because he is just fine underneath that cast. And of course, you know, this is the episode where we also get introduced to jellyfishing as a sport, which becomes, you know, the through line for many, many SpongeBob episodes, like down the line. And what a fun idea. We must ask someone someday about where that idea of jellyfishing as their butterflies. Someone was like, oh, jellyfish look like they're butterflies. We should catch them in a net. Like,
yeah.
How did that happen?
Did you ever go butterfly catching as a kid? I never did that.
You know, I'm so weird. I studied entomology in college, so that was the closest I ever got. I actually had to go collect insects for a project. I had to have 50 different insects of different species or something.
That's cool.
And so I had to capture a butterfly, but that was it. I think I tried when I was a kid and I like quickly gave up. I was like, I don't want to do this.
This is
like,
hard.
It's a lot of running.
Yeah, it is. Butterflies are fast.
It's exhausting. Yeah, they are fast. But also like, I don't know. I felt like it was just the wrong thing. I don't know. I quickly lost interest in butterfly catching when I was a kid. What about you?
I remember when I was a kid and like the first Pokemon video game came out on the Game Boy Pocket and Game Boy Color and stuff.
Oh yeah.
That I learned that like the inspiration for that world was also that the creator of the game had gone bug catching as a kid in Japan. Amazing. When he was growing up. So he wanted to try to capture the feeling of kind of going out into like some wilderness or some forest or some nature and just like finding bugs and putting them in bottles and stuff. So then because of that, and because I love that video game so much, I went out and tried it. And I did not have a fun time. So maybe Frankie, maybe you and I are just not built for that kind of thing. And, you know, you studied science in a different way. And then I just went back to playing video games and watching SpongeBob. So, you know, wasn't for us, but that's okay.
My cockroach that I caught was massive. It was a palmetto bug. It was really big. And everyone was so impressed with my cockroach. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, it was really hard to catch because they're impossible to catch. It caught itself on my carpet. Like its little leg was caught on my carpet. And so like I stared at it for like maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And like talked myself into being like, you're going to go over there and you're going to put that in a jar.
Yeah.
And it's going to be okay. And I was like, no, you can't do it. You can't do it. And I was like, it's just sitting there. You have to go. You're basically helping it. So like, go over there. And I was like, okay. And eventually I put it in a jar, but it was really scary.
I got to be honest, between my girlfriend and I, we were full grown adults. she's really the one who's going to capture bugs and put them outside. Like, still to this day, I'm like, look, that's not me. I'll do other stuff. I do other stuff around the house. No, thank you. I'll pass, please. Yeah. And I know they're more scared of us than we are of them. I know all that stuff. I'm a rational adult. I get it. I totally get it. It's fine. But I just feel still like squigged out. I don't know.
When other people are panicking about an insect, I can pick it up.
Yes, then
it's
I'm calm.
It's so funny. Well, like, I become Superman. I'm like, oh, there's someone. I can help the situation. Let you me just grab it.
Get a piece
put it
of
over
paper,
there. And then
a cup.
Yeah.
Done.
I'm great. But if it's
by yourself,
just me and alone, no.
It becomes a horror movie.
I'll be the hero. Let me be the hero. You know, if there's an audience, I can do anything. You know? Do you have a funniest moment from this episode?
I mean, it's tough to beat firmly grasp it and then puncture it through the thing. But I do love there's a couple of moments. There's a moment where at the beginning of the episode, and this is what I love about SpongeBob too, is that it's not, speaking of superheroes, it's not a superhero show. It's not an action show to be taken seriously in that way. So when Patrick and SpongeBob are getting ready, like classic Batman and Robin from the old 60s Adam West, Burt Ward TV show, you know, when they slide down the ropes or whatever, and it's all cool and they're tough, then they go, because they got like rope burn on their hand. I thought it was such a great way to remind the audience what show we're watching. You know what I mean? It's always about comedy. It's always about making us laugh. I thought that was so, so funny. And I also just love the moment too, again, similar, where SpongeBob's got his glasses on and then the door opens and they're like, you feel like it's going to be this big momentous thing. And then they just go like, la, 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 to run outside and start, you know, jellyfishing. Adorable.
I love it. And also that whole Batman thing, we get like a little taste of Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy.
Yes, which
will become
coming
like
soon.
Just the greatest, I think, additional characters that we've ever seen in the SpongeBob universe.
The best, of the best.
Immediately when that music kicked in, I was like, Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy is in this episode? And I was like, no, they're not, but they're gonna be soon.
It's a great episode that I honestly kind of forgot that it wasn't just based around jellyfishing totally, that a whole chunk of the episode was like Squidward gets hurt and then it's SpongeBob and Patrick like making his life miserable. And I think the sweetest moment is when Squidward's riding away at the beginning on his bicycle because he doesn't want to have anything to do with them. And Patrick has a realization of like, maybe he doesn't like us. And what does SpongeBob say? He goes, no, are you kidding? We're his best friends, without missing a beat. Just like, like, there's no question. There's no, there is no world where Squidward does not love Patrick and SpongeBob, according to SpongeBob, which is so beautiful and so naive.
It's so pure.
It's so pure.
It's so genuine, you know? Like, it's just, that is the quintessential SpongeBob. And that's what makes it so okay. Like, everything becomes okay because of just the purity of SpongeBob and his love for everyone, like, no matter what.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that is a beautiful, genuine moment. I have been pampered in my day after an injury and been like, I just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
But you don't want to say that to the person that's pampering you. You want you want your mom to feel like when she spent all day making that chicken noodle soup, that's exactly what you want to do, is sit there and eat it with her all day. But really, you just want to go into your room and feel terrible and watch Netflix and sleep.
Yep, just want to watch Price is Right reruns.
Exactly.
Please just let me watch The Art of Bob Ross. Like, I just want to be left alone as I heal.
but you accept that charity and you love it in some part of you. And I think that was just like so beautifully depicted in this episode, because you know Squidward didn't want any company. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he was literally incapable of doing anything himself, so he did need a little help.
He needed
he didn't come across the right way when he was blowing the soup in his face.
Wonderful episode. And now, Frankie, I think it's time. Are you ready? We can move on to the next segment of this third episode. You want to talk about classic, you want to talk about iconic, you want to talk about cartoons that have reshaped the history of man.
Okay.
Look no further than Plankton. Here we go. Here's a recap of what happens in the first ever introduction of Plankton. So SpongeBob is enjoying a great day at work when a Krabby Patty tries to escape on its own, only it's not a patty come to life, it's Plankton. He's the rival of Mr. Krabs and owner of the Chum Bucket, who's been trying to steal the Krabby Patty secret formula for years. As I'm saying this, it's like, remember when there was a time where this was new information? It just feels so like we know this. We know this, Hector. So Plankton, in this episode, in his first appearance, he goes so far even as to take over SpongeBob's brain. Will he succeed? We're going to find out.
This is no ghost. This is Plankton stealing me booty.
Hear me, Krabs. When I discover your formula for Krabby Patties, I'll run you out of business. I went to college. Hey, let me go.
Oh, I let you go, Squirt. On a flying saucer.
Frankie, rewatching this, what was your overall thoughts rewatching the introduction to Plankton?
I was, again, blown away, just like you, about the fact that this was new information ever, you know? And it's like, but it's also, it was just so matter-of-factly, you know, Mr. Krabs, as it always is, you know, it's just like, no, that's just Plankton. He's trying to steal me Krabby Patty formula. And it's like, everyone is just like, what? Oh, okay, cool. We're on board. But I love this episode for many reasons. First of all, I love Plankton.
Yes, me too.
I love Plankton. I think that he's the perfect villain, and they say it in this episode. Why is he the perfect villain? Because he is 1% evil and 99% hot gas. You know, they tell us that when he is analyzed at the end of the episode, this guy is not a threat to anyone and doesn't really have any malicious intent behind what he is trying to do, which is basically take his horrific business, which no one will go into, and just make it a place that will potentially earn him some money and a living. Although he is very rich for not having a single person in that restaurant.
Yeah.
He's got to have
technology, man. It's crazy.
I know, right?
Questions and we need answers to.
Yes, exactly. And that, just like you mentioned, also another reason why I love Plankton is he, like Sandy, makes the impossible possible in this underwater world. He is the James Cameron of the SpongeBob SquarePants universe. He builds underwater machines that can do incredible feats, including 3D imagery, I'm sure. And
Future of cinema. I'm positive that's how he would feel. Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. And I love him. I love him. I love him. I love him. And so that's one reason why I just absolutely love this first episode.
Great episode.
Yeah. And what's it something that stands out to you when rewatching it?
There's a bunch, but I was also just kind of floored at how perfectly executed this character is from his first introduction. It was never a thing of like, look, you can go back and watch the first season of The Simpsons and it's rough. It's different. You know, you can go back and watch even early seasons of, early appearances of other classic cartoon characters, and even something with like Batman, the animated series, like the first season feels different than the stuff that came out later. And a lot of those shows that go for so many years, you can see like them refining the character, the character. But dude, how many times have we said now, Frankie, each time these characters appear, whether it's Sandy Cheeks or even Larry the Lobster, this minor side character, it's like, oh, they're already perfectly fully formed.
Perfect.
Steven Hillenburg and the other people he was working with, they so had these characters nailed from the beginning. You know, when we were just talking to Mr. Lawrence and learning that, like, he was auditioning and he was there at the beginning when they were developing the pilot for SpongeBob, not knowing that this was going to be the show that was going to get picked up and last for all of these years and decades. But, like, they all really knew what these characters were. And that formula for the characters is so great. That's the thing I was so blown away by this episode. It's like, yeah, that's fully formed, perfect Plankton. And he is that way today. And he was that way in 1999. It's wild. Here's what I think was the thing I laughed at the most.
Okay, tell me.
After Plankton leaves, something makes SpongeBob laugh and then he can't turn it off. And Mr. Krabs is like, all right, it's not that funny. Like, and SpongeBob just keeps laughing. And I'm like, that's so weird and funny.
Well, it's also the first time that we get introduced into the fact that, like, this is going to be a thing in the SpongeBob world, which is the extended, the joke that goes too long.
Yes, 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 yes. Yep.
This is I think it's our first time of seeing, like, this joke is going to go too long, and you're going to sit there, and you're going to watch it,
and
we're going to laugh.
It's funny, and then it's going to be a little funnier, and then it's going to be unfunny, and then it's going to be the funniest. Like when it loops back around.
Correct, exactly. And so I think I love that you loved that moment, because so did I, because I was like, okay, all right, it's not that funny. It is, because it's true. And then that's what made us laugh, was the Mr. Krabs thing, because we've already gotten over the fact that we're like, he's still making that sound. Oh my goodness. I think also one of the greatest things that just like made me like, and Plankton is also shocked by it, is that SpongeBob isn't dumb.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. SpongeBob figures out the plot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, wait a second, you've got unclear motivations. Yeah. You know, like he's like, not even untoward is the word. Untoward motivations. You know, he's very, he picks up on that right away. Mm-hmm. And Plankton is absolutely shocked. And I think that the audience might be as well, because we've already come to think of him as kind of like, you know, the Rose Nylon of SpongeBob. You know, he's he is the, you know, kind of the
naive, the dumb character.
Yeah. He's dumb. He's a little dumb and naive.
Yeah.
But he isn't.
No.
He isn't. He has his wits about him, and he knows what he's doing, and he knows what's up. And so I think in that moment, we're all like, wow, look at that. That's something new that we learned about this character. And I think it's also, again, back to his pure motivations, which is like when he senses that there is something wrong with the motivations of the person he's speaking with, he has the ability to call that out.
Yep. I think it.
And I love that about him.
It strengthens the dynamic between the hero, SpongeBob, and the antagonist of Plankton, or whoever else they decide to use as kind of an antagonist. Because, yeah, it's like you said, it can't just be the basic villain cartoon plot where they easily manipulate or trick the good guy.
Right.
And the trick is so dumb that you're like, how can he not see through this? So yeah, I love that. But they were able to maintain his SpongeBobbiness, because Plankton lies to him and he's like, it's my birthday. You're my friend, right? And so they become friends. And then once SpongeBob gets wise, he's walking away and he's like, I'll never give you the secret formula. And he goes, even if we're friends. So SpongeBob still believes that he could be friends with Plankton. Like, he still believes that part of it could be real, even if he's like, hey, wait a minute, it's not your birthday tomorrow, you're lying to me, you're just trying to use me to get the secret formula. But he still thinks, but we are friends, we could be friends. Which is so great.
And that's a great message for everyone in the world right now. Like, let's just, you know, like, even if somebody like shows their true colors or a little crazy, then, you know, just be like, well, you know, that you're not going to get away with that. But you know what? I still do love and appreciate and respect you as a person.
We're on this,
you know,
together.
I love, you got to love him. You just got to try and send as much love out into the world as possible right now. It's so crazy out there.
Frankie, I've got a question for you. What in the heck is a planktonic copepod?
A planktonic copepod?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question.
Because that's apparently what kind of animal Sheldon J. Plankton is. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
So a copepod is a single-celled organism.
Whoa.
I'm not 100% sure what kind of, I think a copepod means the shape of the single-celled organism.
Okay, okay.
But he is a single-celled organism, plankton is, I think most people know, does photosynthesis. So it is the ocean's oxygen creator.
Cool.
It's a photosynthetic single-celled organism that actually supplies 70% of oxygen for the entire planet.
What? Are you serious?
Yes.
So when they
yes.
said 99% hot air, hot gas, they weren't kidding? Like, that's really what plankton does?
Yes, exactly. He is literally, he provides oxygen to the world.
Wow.
Yes, copepod is a type of zooplankton, planktonic crustacean distantly related to shrimp and crabs, most common and easily recognizable type of zooplankton, found in almost every ocean, freshwater habitat. Yeah, so it's just, it looks like plankton. If you look up a copepod, it's a little single-celled organism with two antennae.
So funny.
But they create oxygen for, you know, most of the world. With global warming and things since the 50s, their population's almost halved.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, because the oceans are warming, and so plankton are dying. And so, it's not great. It's not great.
No, that's bad.
So we definitely need, separate you know, podcast about climate change.
Yeah, big, huge problems that we have to solve. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the ocean is suffering. But anyway, we got to save the little planktons.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they provide oxygen for most of the world, which I think is really cool.
Here's something I've been dying to know, Frankie.
Yeah, so please ask me.
If you went through the Chum Bucket Analyzer, what would it say your percentages are made up of? What would it say?
Oh my goodness, what a great question.
to recap, it said that seaweed was 50% sea and 50% weed.
50% weed. I laughed out loud for that
so
part
funny.
As well.
I'm like, oh yeah, makes sense. And plankton again, like you said, 1% evil, 99% hot gas. What would Frankie Grande be?
100% glitter. Do you have a favorite moment from this episode?
I mean, I thought it was really funny, and I guess I forgot this from when I was a kid. When Plankton goes, I'm smarter than you. I went to college. I think it's really funny. I'm like, that is the most insecure thing somebody could say and kind of sums up the character for me. So that was a super funny moment along with SpongeBob laughing too much. Those are some of my favorite moments. What about yourself? What's your single favorite moment from the introductory episode of Plankton?
My favorite moment is, this is my lab. And this is my laboratory. When it's a picture of a Labrador retriever, I scream laugh. I
so funny.
Screamed at my television. This
it's
is
so
my
funny.
Lab. I couldn't breathe.
It's great because that college line, like in Camp Coral, he's working at the camp in the canteen, like serving the campers food, and he's saving for his college fund is
oh,
what Plankton
they
is doing.
Thought about these
I know,
things.
Right? Isn't that great?
Oh, they thought about it. This, you know, it's like, so interesting. I wonder if there's you know, as people are sitting, like if the actual cast, you know, and writers and creators who've been working
stuff?
On it for years,
who remembers
this
stuff?
Are they, is there a Wikipedia for SpongeBob
there's
room?
There's a SpongeBobpedia for sure. But I wonder if, Frankie, that's a great question. Are they looking these things up themselves or do they just know? Do they remember?
Someone's like, no, in episode 3, he says that he's going to go to college. Oh, so, great. We'll put that in this episode. Yeah. Great. Good catch. Who is that person?
I want to know. I definitely want to know. And the really funny thing, too, is that because Plankton is like the anti-Sandy, right? The mad scientist versus the good scientist is that Plankton being on Camp Coral is also technically the reason why Sandy is in the show. Because as we know, SpongeBob and Sandy meet when they're adults, but yet Sandy Cheeks is on Camp Coral. I know I talked about this before. There's a great episode in Camp Coral where you learn that the whole episode is they need to get some food replacement for the camp. So SpongeBob creates a burger and it's so tasty and he wrote down the formula somewhere and the entire episode is Plankton's trying to get it. And at the end, they inadvertently burn it up. And it's Sandy is like the young Sandy Cheeks is involved in it accidentally getting destroyed. And then she goes and talks to somebody and it's her future self drawn in 2D animation style, Sandy Cheeks, the one that we know from the future, from the present. And she says, good, I'm glad that I reached back in time, told my younger self to go to Camp Coral to meet SpongeBob just so that you could prevent Plankton from getting the secret formula then, because in my future, it was really bad when he got the secret formula. So now she's a part
multiverse.
Of the show. Exactly. It's like a time travel multiverse thing. And I think it's so funny. And the logic is so airtight and thought of, and yet in the Patrick Starr show, the logic is thrown out the window, Frankie.
Yeah, yeah.
They, as
There's
we know,
no
like they're just like, and insanity. And it's so funny and so great.
Oh, I do think that the fans will appreciate that because I had that moment of being like, what?
Yep.
You know, when I first saw the first episode of Camp Coral, I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I was like, they don't know each other yet. I love that episode. It's under the tree dome.
But now it's all good. It's all good.
It's
thought
a multiverse.
They thought it through.
I mean, thanks to Marvel, like we accept multiverses very easily now. I think there's a lot of suspension of disbelief in that world. So it's great.
It's true.
Thank you, Marvel, for teeing us up to never, ever, ever question when there's not continuity in things moving
Absolutely.
Forward. They're like, oh, no, that's just a multiverse.
Multiverse.
Yeah, you know, that Starbucks cup in that Game of Thrones episode, it's just a multiverse.
I wonder if like people will use that in real life. Like if they were a jerk to somebody, then the next day they call them. They're like, I got to apologize. It was my multiverse self. It's some for some other universe. It wasn't me. So anyway, we're good. Like what?
please let's everyone listening to this do that at some point in their life. Well, this next week, I challenge you.
Just like,
act
weird.
Me. That was multiverse me.
Great episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. A dang classic. I love Plankton. I love this episode. I love that it has gifted us with the gif of Plankton controlling SpongeBob's brain, only that it's not SpongeBob. I've used the gif where it's Vince McMahon from the WWE walking down the ramp like, and he looks so silly walking so that it's like Plankton controlling him. So funny. We cannot overstate the contribution to pop culture that this episode gives us. So that is Jellyfishing and Plankton. What a joy to talk about them with you, Frankie. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, your insight, and your joy. Can't wait for the next episode. This was great.
Me too, Hector. I adore you, and I adore SpongeBob, and I'm so excited that we have Plankton now to add to our colorful list of characters that we get to talk about every single week. We will see you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.